Well, this morning we're going to be looking at Paul's letter to the church at Rome, at least that small portion of it that was read for us this morning. The book of Romans is one of those books that you can, as far as I can tell, spend the rest of your life in, and perhaps realize that you've just begun to plumb the depths that's there. I've occasionally run across people who tell you that you really can't preach the book of Romans unless you preach the whole thing all the time, and I just think, well, that's just silly. There's all kinds of things we can take out of here that are going to be of tremendous value for us. And when I was looking at this part of Romans, the first thing that came to mind was the sermon title. Is that even possible? And I realized that it's the same feeling I have when I look at the Sermon on the Mount. And in some ways, this is all of, you might want to think of it as Paul's take on a lot of the things that we have in the Sermon on the Mount. And when you think of the things that we're going through, or that were read for us, and we go through them. Some of them are fairly straightforward, and you think, well, of course, that's something. You know, love must be sincere, of course. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Sure, we can do that. Be devoted to one another in love, honor one another. And you think of these, and you go, okay, these are things that we all strive for already. They're not that hard to at least conceptualize, even if they're not that easy to do. You know, keep your spiritual fervor. Be joyful in hope. Be patient in affliction. Well, I'm working on that one right now. Although, you know, as far as affliction goes, a knee arthroscopy is really not all that much of an affliction. But, you know, I'm trying to be patient with it. Faithful in prayer. And we think of those, practice hospitality, and we go, okay, well, this is what most of us are aiming for already. And we can see those, and they make sense to us. Of course we want to do that. And then we get into the ones that are a little bit trickier. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. If that's easy for anyone, I've never met that person. I know it's easier for some at the stage I've met them, but when I talk to these people who sort of radiate that sense that they are able to do this, that when they are in somehow being oppressed in any way, and they look at that as an opportunity to bless those people. And I have met some at that stage of their life, but when I talked to them, they had to learn how to do that. That wasn't easy for them. It didn't come naturally. And I don't think it comes naturally for any of us. If we drop down a bit, you know, do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. This is something that most of us have to grow in. And it's not that we are conceited people necessarily, but all of us, it seems, will have somebody or a kind of person who brings out the worst in us. And I run into this on a regular basis in my own life, even now. And there's some just little language things that people use that I realize that if I'm not careful, I will judge people on the basis of that. Something as trivial as how you describe things. Well, how can that possibly be useful? Well, it isn't. And it's a sign of my own conceit that because I know how to use that correctly and you don't, it means I'm somehow better. Well, that impetus to judge is something that we all have one way or another, I think. Some people find it very easy to judge people on the basis of whether or not they turn off their indicators when they should in their car. The kind of characterizations of the person ahead of you on the highway driving with one of their indicators on for any length of time by other people in the car are really quite extraordinary. That how you could, on the basis of this small repeated blinking of a light, decide that person is, and there's a wide range of descriptors that come out, is actually kind of shocking. When we think of it as this is us setting ourselves up in judgment on someone else. This is something that we do. And we tend to do it quite well and sometimes gleefully. We need to get over that. That's a kind of conceit. And then we come into this one, which is, do not repay anyone evil for evil. That's hard for most of us. Because there's something within us that says that evil needs to be repaid. Justice needs to be done. And we're right. The problem with all of these things isn't that we are just sort of reaching into the stars and pulling out something to be judgmental about or whatever else it might be. It's that all of these things that Paul is talking about here connect with us at deep levels. And most of these deep levels relate to the whole idea of justice or of doing what is right. Why are we aggravated when people speed by us, even though that means they're out of our way and they won't cause us any problems? Well, it's because what they're doing is wrong. And it is wrong. People who drive with their indicators on for long periods of time, you're not supposed to do that. Well, we somehow need to get past the fact that we're not called to live in judgment of those people and realize that we're very seldom called to live in judgment of people. But there's something deep within us that says when evil is done, something needs to happen. And the easiest way to do it is to repay evil with evil. We don't call it evil when we do it. We say we're just, well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, and this is one that I've never really been sure has worked, but if you have a child who bites, then you bite the child to show them what it's like. The impetus is of value, that we want to prevent this bad behavior. But I've never heard of that actually working. I'm not saying it never has. I've never heard of that kind of thing working. And where the sense that we need to do something, that is the good part. It's how we do it that causes the problem. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. And this is where it all starts to come together. It is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, and this comes out of Proverbs, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Not literal coals, just in case you're looking forward to that. Literal coals will not appear out of the sky and burn people's heads when you do good things for them. I like Gene's translation much better. They will burn with shame when they realize what they've done. But all of these things revolve around, in a very real sense, like the difficult parts, not the first part where we love being sincere in things, but this whole idea of not repaying evil for evil, not taking revenge, blessing those who persecute you. We can only do that, I would put it to you, we can only do that if we are convinced that justice will still be done. Because if justice isn't done, if in this case, where we're called to repay evil with good, if justice isn't done at some point, then evil remains unpunished. And unpunished evil is an affront to God. Our difficulty is that when we think we're the ones that have been put on this earth to punish evil, which we probably haven't. And so instead of giving in to this very authentic, completely human desire to take justice into our own hands, Paul is telling us that no, because we're not wise enough, because we're not aware enough, because we don't know what God knows, we really can't be trusted to take justice into our own hands whenever we feel like it. And Paul tells us that by leaving this to God, justice will be done. And our hands will be clean. Now this takes, we're not talking about sort of common jurisprudence. We're not talking about the legal system that we have in Canada at this point. So let's not go too far here. We're talking about our interactions with other people. We're talking about how do we deal with the friction that just happens because we live in a fallen world. How do we deal with people who think in their deepest core of their being, as far as I can tell, that our getting together on a Sunday morning to sing hymns and worship God is almost indescribably stupid? Is it our responsibility to somehow convince them that they're wrong? No. It's our responsibility to live our lives in such a way that they eventually become convinced that they're wrong. And if they persecute us, and in Canada, persecution for what we believe really isn't terribly dramatic, but if they make fun of us, if they ridicule us, if in some extent it does go further than that and you're not hired for a job because you're religious or whatever it might be, we're not called to fix that in any way that could possibly be described as repaying evil for evil. We're called to leave that up to God, which is hard. It's hard not to defend ourselves when we think we've been slighted. And what makes it hard is that it's hard to do it in such a way that doesn't make things worse. Because the easiest way, when somebody yells at you, to deal with them is to yell back, only louder. Anyone who's had children or has been a child, so I think we've pretty much covered everybody here, has probably encountered this at least at some point. But does it really accomplish anything? Does it really make a difference? No. When we pursue justice as we understand it, one of the things we might want to remember, if we can remember back to when we were children, or perhaps we need to use the example of children around us, think how important it was for you, or for your these children in your life, that things be fair. And being fair is important. It's part of that whole constellation of things that fall under the general heading of justice. Being fair matters. It really does. But think back to what that meant the last time you saw it. For children, the notion that two people can receive different things and this still be fair is almost impossible for them to comprehend up to a certain stage. And if you have twins, you see this really, really well. Or children similar of age or whatever else it might be. Where you will do something for one child in one way, and do something for the other child in a different way, that from most people's sort of semi-objective standards would say these are more or less equivalent. But the chances of one, if not both of them, saying it's not fair is really significant. It's really high, I mean. Because they will look at what the other child got, and even if they don't necessarily want it the same way what they got, they will say that it's different, so it's not fair. And it's a stage that we all need to go through. What's interesting is that when your twins, in my case, get a little bit older, when they get into double digits and a little bit beyond, and you ask them about that, they will at this point say, no, that wasn't, it was fair. One of us wasn't being mistreated, one of us wasn't being somehow done out of value. It's just at that age, we looked at things and we said, well, if it isn't the same, it's not fair. Because it used to drive us crazy. And I'm sure if you've ever been in this situation with grandkids or whatever else it is, it does it just the same for you. You carefully take into account what each child is interested in and provide something that meets those interests. And for them to then look at something that they don't even really want and say that it's not fair because the other child got this thing, makes you want to pull your hair out. But you get through it, maybe without as much hair as you'd like, but I don't think that's a cause of what I've got. Later on, they realize that, no, that was just an inferior view of what fair meant. And it was fair because we gave each of them what they actually wanted. And that first little bit of it's not fair hardly ever lasts very long. They then go and play with the toy or whatever it is because it is what they want. But that lengthy little exposition into child rearing and what it reminds me of hopefully reminds you as well that maybe, just maybe, one of the reasons why we need to leave justice up to God is because maybe we're at that same kind of stage. I don't think we're as simplistic as children are who are talking about what's fair and what isn't. But at the same time, I think it's a little, at least potentially arrogant for us to think that we always know what's best. There are some things that are unalterably wrong. It's just, and we should oppose those. Paul is not talking here about not resisting injustice. Paul, in this section, does not say that there is never a time when we take a stand against what's wrong or anything like that. This is for these times when we're perhaps a little too full of our own sense of what's right. One of the reasons we leave justice up to God is because God's justice is perfect, and ours can't be. We do the best we can. We have laws in Canada, most of which make perfect sense, most of which anyone can get behind. There are some that I'm sure we'd have some disagreements on, but we live in a country where law matters, and we're not called to ignore that. This isn't some kind of a call to chaos. It's a call more to our own personal lives, that when we are attacked for things that we think are unnecessary or unreasonable, that it doesn't mean that we have carte blanche to reply in kind. Instead, we are called to repay evil with good, curses with blessing. And if it makes it easier for you to visualize coals on somebody's head, go right ahead. But we're called to do this because we leave room for God's wrath. I've always thought that's a fascinating way that Paul put it, at least in this translation. It really speaks to me. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. If we want perfect justice, I think it's not an unreasonable reading here of this text, that if we want justice, we need to leave that up to God. When we take justice into our own hands, we interfere with that. We need to be able to leave those things behind. Is that even possible? Yes, it is. Is it easy? Not for me. I won't speak for you, because I don't know where you are in some of these things. But I suspect, at least now and then, it's not easy for you. When we're dealing with just the friction of life, when we're dealing with the things that drive us crazy, the people that drive us crazy, the people that never seem to understand that we are doing our best, that we are doing what we think is right, those people that you may have in your lives now or maybe had in the past, who always seem to put the worst possible spin on everything you did, you still need to repay evil with good, blessing with cursing, or repay cursing with blessing. I think I've told you of one of my fellow students when I was in college who talked about how he got along with his roommate. He called them prayer bombs, which seemed to work for him. When he and his roommate were having some kind of conflict or something, he would silently pray for his roommate. And no, he did not pray that he would break his ankle at basketball practice or anything. He would pray that his roommate would have a good day, that he'd have a good night's sleep, that he'd do well in his next exam, that his papers would go well, that he'd have good news from home, that he'd get a care package, that he and his girlfriend would have a great date. He would pray blessings upon him until he actually started to feel them. Because apparently he didn't pray these blessings did not spring from the wellspring of grace in his heart necessarily. And it changed the way he felt about his roommate. I've tried this in other places. It's really hard to hate somebody you've prayed blessings upon. And I think that's what Paul's talking about. When that person cuts you off in the parking lot, when that person steals your parking spot, if you take a moment to pray blessings upon them and ask that their day will go well, it's really hard to be angry with them. I mean, these are small examples, but this is what we're called to be. The kind of people who, when we are injured and have a reasonable right to some kind of justice, we say, I am not going to create that justice. That person took the parking spot that I've obviously been waiting for. I'm not going to bump their car with mine. I'm not going to leave them a nasty note. I'm just going to move on because God will take care of that. I will leave room for God's wrath. And by doing that, I will create more room for love in my own life? Is it possible? Yes, it is. So I said it's not easy. But Paul's call to us here is to remember always that God will bring justice and that it'll be perfect justice. But we need to leave room for it and not take things into our own hands. And the nice thing is that if we spend less time looking for justice and more time looking for opportunities to bless people, we tend to be much more pleasant people to be around. That's not the only reason to do it. The most significant and best reason is because we're called to right here in Holy Scripture. But the upside is pretty good for us too. So as we go into another week, where we will have opportunities to be aggravated by people, I'm almost certain of it, let's take those moments to replace our initial desire for revenge or even for justice, and let's replace it with blessing. Amen.